Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Dorothy Coombson.
Thank you.
Publication day.
I know, it's very exciting.
It's your 10th publication day.
Yes, it is. That's funny, actually. Yes, I didn't think about that. I thought about 10th novel, but didn't. Yeah, 10th publication day, yes.
And what is that? Is it still the same thrill?
Absolutely. Every single one of them, very exciting. I love it. I'm very fortunate. I have a great job. It's not easy, but it's great. And yes, every day it's still a thrill. I haven't seen the shops yet, so I'm going to go to the shops soon to have a look on the shelves and have my usual picture with my book. Hi!
Me, my book!
Yeah, I was just... My local bookshop, they always go, oh, you're back.
Well, it seems like you're back each year.
Well, yeah, just almost. Thereabouts, yeah. I write a book a year, yes.
Yeah, tell me how you started, because you were in journalism, I understand.
Yes, a long time ago now. I used to work for women's magazines. I was mainly a sub-editor, and then I progressed to become a production editor, which was the person who writes the headlines and then sends it off to be printed. Then I moved to Australia. Because I wanted to change my life, and I thought, I went to a wedding in Australia, and I thought, oh, it's all right here, so I'll get a job here, which obviously at the time I didn't realise how hard it was, but I applied for a job and got it. So on the women's magazine over there, so I went and lived there for 2 years. Came back, but all the time I was writing in the evenings and weekends, every spare moment I was still writing books, and I was still working full time until my fifth book was published. So
believe until then.
Well, it's not that I didn't believe, I just couldn't afford to, because you know, we all have this fantasy that we're going to be millionaires from our writing books, and yeah, good luck with that. No, all those years ago I did believe this idea that, you know, once I had a publishing deal, I'd be able to give up full-time work and I'd be able to just write all day. And it just doesn't work out like that, you know. And I'm glad as well, because, you know, you need to remind yourself constantly that you have to work hard at whatever you do. And also that there are people out there, the people who buy your books work hard as well. And they want you to have done the best you can before they spend their money on your book.
Yeah.
So went to Australia, then I came back and I decided I was going to live as frugally as possible, so I could write books and turn my career on its head, basically. So do journalism and editing in my spare time. And then
that is the night job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, slept on my brother's sofa for 6 months.
Did your brother also decide that you would live free?
Yeah. No, he was very generous. And then I moved to Brighton. So.
Excellent. And your first book was published in 2003.
Yes.
But now we're on to your 10th book. Yes. Yay.
Yes.
And your 10th book is That Girl from Nowhere.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that, because I'm adopted myself, so this was
a story
of interest and close to me.
Yeah. So. Well, I wanted to explore the subject of adoption, and also the subject of assisted suicide. But years ago, when I started writing the book, about three, four years ago, it wasn't right. The characters weren't right, and so I left it, put it to one side, and started something else. I started two other books. I wrote two other books. Came back to this subject, and it was obviously the right time because the characters were a lot easier to kind of sketch out, and the story changed quite a bit but was still similar to what I'd started with. But and you know, I then went on to do research on adoption, but not from the perspective of the adoptive parents or the birth parents, but from the adopted person, because one of the things I noticed when I was doing my reading and research that you very rarely hear from the adoptive person. They're kind of like the quietest voice in the whole of the triangle. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know what it was like for them and how it affected their place in the world and how they felt about themselves, and also how they related to their parents, you know, the parents who brought them up and the parents who gave birth to them.
Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you.
That's interesting because, yes, now that you say that, they are sort of like the product.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They just pass from this person to that person.
Yeah.
But and the stories we do about them is, you know, they're finding.
Yes, they're looking for some of the older, how that person relates to the parents, which are the set of parents.
Yeah.
And I wanted to tell a story of somebody, how they relate to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents are secondary to that. So that's, and I didn't discover that that's how big an issue that was for people who have been adopted until I started researching and talking to people and finding out that, you know, they often have to put their feelings aside. I mean, I'm not adopted, so I don't feel I should be speaking for all adopted people, but these people I spoke to, they said a lot of time they had to put their feelings aside so they didn't upset their adopted parents or their birth parents. And again, they were third in their life, you know, and I just found that very, that really affected me, actually. I found it very affecting talking to people and hearing their stories. And some of the things that people say, really, they don't actually think about what they're saying and how it can affect somebody who has been adopted. So I wanted to explore that subject, and it was very interesting. It was,
Well, in a lot of your subjects, I would say like Jodi Picoult or people like that, a lot of your subjects, you know, your subjects, you do like to get into meaty, emotional turmoil, you know, dig in there. Why does that, what's thrilling about
it's
that?
It's interesting
to
kind of explore that part of people. Because a lot of people go through a lot of difficult things, but they don't, talk about it all the time, or it's not, you know, it's not shown on the front of papers all the time. You know, ordinary people go through extraordinary difficult times and they have to deal with it and they keep going and they carry on, and that was fascinates me, how resilient people are. So, you know, I'm quite mean to my characters. I put them through a lot to see if they can get to the other side, and they do, you know. They're not necessarily in the way that they hoped. And I do have people who email me and aren't happy with the ending of my books sometimes because they are wanting a particular type of ending. But, you know, that's not what life is about. I want a realistic... I try and make my endings realistic in the sense that that person's done that journey and they are where they need to be at the end of the book.
And that these things do change us. They shape
absolutely,
us.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know, we are all... And the people around us are shaped by
absolutely,
these, you know, these ripples that happen in our lives.
And you can't help that. A lot of the time, the ripples that start, you can't actually help them.
Yeah.
Help that, you know, what the catalyst is for the change of your life. A lot of time you can't help it. It's an external force.
That strikes me as that you're sort of expanding on your natural curiosity, you know, study of psychology, journalism, but then you get to fictionalize it.
Oh, absolutely, and it's easier to, much easier. We don't have to stick to the exact facts, you know,
the truth,
to make it up. Yeah,
but it's emotional truth.
And I hope when I write the books that I'm as true to the people who I speak to as possible, you know, and I do them justice. So I do, but you know, it's great to make up people and to. And they are a product of all the people I've spoken to, or the research I've done, but they aren't made up, and they're never me. I know people keep asking that, but I'm not my stories.
No. You're not your stories. No. And do you always do research?
For the later books, I do, yes. Yeah. Because there are subjects that you have to be very careful to get right. I mean, like I always say with the later books, when I start a subject, for example, like I say with adoption, I always think I know, because we have the world around us, we're shown things all the time, we read things all the time, and we think we have an idea about the subject. And it's not until you speak to somebody who's been through it that you kind of go, wow, I never thought of that. Like the thing with birthdays, that it never occurred to me that a lot of adopted people have a real problem with their birthdays. And I mean, I love a good birthday, me. And I found it really sad that a lot of people who have been adopted have an issue with their birthdays, because that was the day that their life changed completely. And that was kind of surprising, and it never would have occurred to me until I started doing research. So and I want to get that sort of thing right. I don't want to be imposing my ideas and the stereotypes that I've unconsciously, you know, absorbed over time.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings.
Mwah. Yeah, because we have sort of societal stories about
things. Yeah, absolutely,
things,
yeah.
And especially in this age of very, very surface yeah. information on every subject, we sort of assume we know things. And it's really, I find it very admirable, because I think a lot of women's fiction, and I think we can safely say that yeah. you write women's
yeah.
fiction.
Yeah.
There's a blitheness
yeah.
to deep subjects like this sometimes.
Yeah, and that's partly because it's very difficult, I think, for women to get away, in inverted commas, with writing beyond the surface and writing characters who aren't very nice, you know, and who aren't always sweet and lovely. I know with Clemency, some of the things that she does, I think she's quite selfish. Mm-hmm. But she's allowed to be, because she's a human being. And it's very interesting, that sort of thing. The flaws that people have are very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I know that sometimes I think people would prefer if I did write characters who were all sweetness and light and who did the right thing all the time. But and that's, we're kind of expected, women are expected to write that, particularly for women's
yes.
fiction, you know. They people want to read about nice characters, I think, maybe because then it excuses them from not being nice all the time or something. But
something to aspire
yeah,
to.
Yeah, exactly. But I like to put flawed mm-hmm. characters in, not the sort of like the comic book type of
yeah.
flaws, but, you know, somebody who does struggle with putting other people first, or, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things I wanted to do with That Girl From Nowhere particularly was tell it from her point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw all her character flaws, and we saw it from somebody who has been, who's, like I say, their stories are very quiet in the whole adoption triangle thing, and I wanted to keep the focus on her, so it wasn't about the people who adopted her, it wasn't about the people who, you know, gave her DNA, it was about her and how she relates, not just to them, but also to the world in general.
It occurs to me, and I think maybe I can get away with saying this because I was adopted, but it occurs to me that that sort of selfishness is also kind of an adoptive trait. And it comes from, and I think, from that not having a voice on the outside, so that actually inside you're creating that yourself.
Oh, absolutely. I think, and yeah, you do, you know,
yeah.
because... I mean, the things that people say to people who have been adopted, that, and it's not... I think when I was saying about Clemency being selfish, it wasn't just because of her adoption, but I think I understand what you're trying to say, in the sense of that you kind of can hold a lot of anger, resentment that you can't externalise, because you're not allowed to say
Yeah, and things. The sort of unnamed, some people say wound or something,
yeah.
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a sort of amorphous thing that you don't know how to get rid of because,
yes, yeah,
because you didn't feel it.
No. And you're not allowed to feel
yeah.
it as well,
yeah.
and you know. And if you do feel it, then you're being disloyal to your adopted parents, or you're not acknowledging the pain that your birth parents went through. And
yeah.
you know, you have to think about these other people before you think about expressing yourself. That's what I found with the research I was doing, and that's why with Clemency, I wanted her to be a real person, and to you know, because it's told in the first person, you get to see what she thinks. She doesn't
yeah.
often say those things, but she's. You are there with her in her secret thoughts
yes.
that we all have.
Yeah.
Aren't we? I mean, we
yes.
all have all these secret thoughts that we don't voice. Well, most of us don't voice them. Some of us feel no way at all about voicing these terrible things.
Some people are just born without a filter.
I know, exactly. Absolutely.
Just a filter-free
yeah,
existence.
Yeah. It
must
be very freeing. But yeah.
Lonely times, but freeing.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well, so, and tell me about what's the role, what do you think the role of women's fiction and reading, because I know you're very passionate about literacy.
Absolutely, yes.
And what's, you know, starting with the role of literacy and then the role of reading, well, I mean, obviously literacy in terms of surviving, but then beyond that.
Well, I think
beyond mere
me, for me, reading is the best thing in the world. I absolutely love reading, and when I've gone through hard times in my life, I always have picked up a book, and it's a solace and somewhere to escape to. And you know, as I once said, you're never alone when you've got a good book. But literacy, I think people can underestimate how important it is to be able to read, and also to be able to relate to the world, and, you know, see things around you, and also be able to defend yourself, and, you know, and just, it gives you such a place in the world. And, you know, if you are, you do have problems reading or have dyslexia or something, it can be very off-putting,
so,
and isolating, and, you know, and so I think, you know, people, I think everyone should read, but that's just my opinion, but I think literacy is so important because it can give you access to so many different worlds.
Yeah.
And you don't have to leave your chair to visit different planets, to become a different person, to learn about new worlds. You know, that's what reading does. So I think it's fantastic.
Yes, I'm just picturing that as you're saying it. Yeah.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
And do you feel... And I don't know if this is an uncomfortable subject or not, but you're a black woman,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of women's fiction, and women's, you know, what we call women's fiction, a lot of that seems to be produced by and for white middle-class women.
You know, for me, it's not a big deal because I am a black woman, so I write about black women who are ordinary people. I think a lot of time we kind of forget that people are people, and, you know, we all have
statistics.
Well, exactly.
And we have, I feel like a majority or a minority in my own life, you know.
And whenever I'm doing research onto any subject, really, I discover that no matter where people come from, whatever colour they are, or class they are, or country they live, there is so much, the same themes, the same feelings, and the same ideas come from people going through the same thing. So, I mean, I write books about women who happen to be black, and white as well, and men who happen to be black and men who happen to be white. That's just what I write. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because other writers write from, you know, particular where they're from, and no one questions it.
Yeah, exactly. It's not flagged up.
No.
Yeah, but the reason why I flag it up, though, is because I see a lack of it.
Mm.
And that sort of bothers them.
And it is.
Wait a minute, why isn't there that?
People do ask me all the time, and, you know, but...
And it's also hard. It's like, I'm not the poster child. Like, I'm not the flag bearer.
I'm not
the poster
child for anything at all.
Just reading.
Not even that. You know, people can read if they want to. If they don't want to, fine. You're missing out. Not me.
So, and who are you reading at the moment?
At the moment, I just finished a book called A Proper Family Holiday. And there is an adoption theme in that by an author called Chrissy Manby. And rather annoyingly, she's written a sequel to it, so I now have to read the sequel. Because I like to finish a book and finish it. And I was like, oh, I've got to read the sequel now. It's not a hardship, it's just I'd rather, you know.
I was going to move on to something else.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm committed now. But I like reading all sorts of books, and if you're a writer, you need to read as many books as you can, different types of books, different genres, different people, different things from the ones that you want to write, because you need to know what stories have been told and how they've been told. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm amazed whenever I meet people who say, I want to be a writer, and I never read anything, it's all rubbish. And I'm like, oh, okay, good luck. You know,
how do you know?
Exactly. And how can you...
How can you compare?
Exactly, and how can you want to do something that you don't want to be a part of, and that's part of it, you know.
Yeah.
For me, the best thing is to go to a bookshop and see what's on the shelves and pick it up, flick through, read a few pages, and then decide if I'm going to buy it. Because I think one of the most important things, I think, is buying books. Because, as I said before, when you've spent your money on it, you appreciate it a lot more. And, you know, and that's why I do keep in the back of my mind that people... I mean, I like to work hard at whatever I do, but if someone's going to spend their money on it, I need them to know that I've done the best I can. They might not like it still, but I've done the best I can.
Yeah, because they're investing in you.
Exactly.
In a bit.
Yeah.
You know, in a sort of a way. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I know you probably have about 10 books you're juggling. So, what are you writing? What are you researching? And what's next?
Well, I'm not writing at the moment because I've...
It's publication day!
Yeah, exactly.
Get the day off!
Yeah, exactly. I have got 3 ideas in my head that I'm mulling over, so I haven't picked one yet. So once I've been through the process of finding out which one I'm going to go ahead with, I shall be talking to the relevant people. And so at the moment I'm just taking it easy.
Excellent.
Yes,
excellent.
I probably shouldn't be, but yeah.
Well, enjoy publication day number 10.
Thank you
so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
Oh, thank you for talking to me.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling?
You want me to stay? I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about to go, and then you'll know for me to stay. I got to be me. You'll never be in doubt. That's what it's all about. You can't take me for granted and smile. Come on, please. Reaching me by phone, because I promise I'll be gone for a while. When you see me again, I hope that you have been the kind of person that you really are now. We got to get in straight. How could I ever be late when you're my woman taking up my time? Oh!
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.